WCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guest is Max Tran. Max is a Spanish language public educator in Petaluma. Outside of school hours, Tran is on the California Teachers Association's regional equity team, as well as being a county welcoming school trainer.
Tran also fosters and advocates for an inclusive culture in their classroom, school, and community through Amor para Todos, is a legal observer trainer, and they are multilingual and openly transgender. Welcome, Max Tran.
Thank you, Sheridan and Diana, for having me. It's a pleasure and honor to be asked to be on your show. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. We're so happy to have you on.
And we are really looking forward to speaking with you in more detail and learning about your life. But first, here's news and events with our Outbeat member, Greg Maralia.
I'd love to change the world.
This is Greg Maralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of September 6th, 2025. South Carolina has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to reject one transgender student's ability to use the boys' bathroom, while a challenge to the state's anti-transgender bathroom law makes its way through the courts. According to Alexandra Brodsky, litigation director for Public Justice's Student Civil Rights Project, South Carolina wants the Supreme Court to take the extraordinary remedy of intervening in an ongoing lower court appeal, all because the state wants to stop a ninth grader from using the boys' restroom while that appeal proceeds. In the summer of 2024, South Carolina enacted an anti-transgender bathroom ban as part of a broader wave of transphobic legislation advancing across the United States, despite a ruling in 2020 by the 4th District Court of Appeals that schools may not ban transgender students from using a restroom aligned with their gender identity. The law's impact was immediately harmful to transgender youth in South Carolina. A 13-year-old boy in Berkeley County was suspended for using the boys' bathroom. When he returned, school staff were instructed to police his bathroom use, and teachers began dividing students into boys' and girls' line before bathroom breaks to enforce the policy. Even though none of his peers objected to his use of the boys' restroom, teachers repeatedly yelled at him and blocked him from using the boys' bathroom altogether. The constant harassment and threat of potential expulsion if he continued using the boys' bathroom forced his parents to withdraw him from the school and enroll him in an online program. Although the U.S. Supreme Court has declined to consider the constitutionality of anti-transgender bathroom bills so far, South Carolina argued in its emergency relief application that the Fourth Circuit should have considered the Supreme Court's recent decision in U.S. v. Scrimeti, which upheld Tennessee's restrictions on gender-affirming care for transgender youth. And the suspect in the mass shooting responsible for killing two school-aged children and wounding 17 others at a Catholic church in Minneapolis has been identified as having changed their legal name back in 2020 to reflect their gender identity as female. Predictably, voices on the far right have immediately seized on this tidbit, blaming the suspect's gender identity for the shooting. Among those making a statement is U.S. Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division, Harmet Dillon, who said, quote, "One of the factors that's not getting discussed is the pumping of children full of drugs that purport to change their gender identity, and that it has numerous side effects. It has permanent side effects," end quote. Dillon went on to say, quote, "Adults need to be held accountable for what happened. Guns do not," end quote. The suspect in this case killed themselves after the shooting, and it's not known how they identified at the time of their death. It's also not known if the suspect ever sought out any form of gender-affirming medical care, including hormone replacement therapy. Major medical associations and psychiatric associations all agree that gender-affirming care has been shown to improve the mental health for transgender people, reducing suicidality, depression, and anxiety. It's not known exactly what evidence Dillon has that testosterone suppression would increase a person's aggressiveness. According to an article published by Mother Jones, 134 of the 141 mass shootings they tracked since 1982 were carried out by men with no history of identifying as transgender or non-binary. Two were carried out by women believed to be cisgender, and two more were carried out by a man and a woman, also believed to be cisgender, who happened to be working together. The article made the observation that, quote, transgender individuals are much more prone to be being the victims of violence than they are likely to be the ones committing it, end quote. And the Trump administration is now escalating its campaign against trans-inclusive sex education, ordering nearly every U.S. state and territory to remove references to gender ideology from federally funded programs or risk losing millions of dollars. According to the Advocate magazine, the Trump administration has already terminated California's $12 million grant fund after state officials refused to remove lessons acknowledging gender identity and pronouns. California leaders argued that their curriculum has already been federally approved, was medically accurate, and complied with state law requiring inclusive sex education. Governor Newsom's office condemned the revocation as political interference, saying, quote, if it's a day ending in Y, President Trump is attacking kids. Adrian Shanker, former Deputy Assistant Secretary for Health Policy at the Department of Health and Human Services, called the political influence on health programs for vulnerable people, quote, unfathomable, end quote. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moraglia.
So if you just joined us, we are talking with Max Tran. And again, Max Tran, we'd really like to thank you for taking your time out of your very, very busy schedule.
Of course, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. So what we'd like to do is just start out by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself. You have a lot of hats that you wear in your introduction, and we would love to maybe take that apart and find out what it is that you do.
Okay, thank you. I think probably firstly, I consider myself a public educator. So that's, you know, what I do Monday through Friday. A lot of the advocacy that I do outside the classroom is related to school community, young people, and then further like LGBTQ communities and how LGBTQ students experience school. I've been involved in LGBTQ advocacy through Amor para Todos, and I kind of was feeling in the last year or two, yeah, I want to expand more out of just LGBTQ advocacy. A lot of the work that we've been doing in schools and in my advocacy has been intersectional, but it's kind of been like LGBTQ sort of expanding into intersectionality. And so I started becoming more involved in immigrant rights, and that's how I got into the Legal Observer community with North Bay Rapid Response. And I started doing that. The first training I gave was a specifically queer Legal Observer training. So that reduced a lot of the barriers for me of like fear or insecurities, speaking in front of groups, speaking to a group of queer individuals. It was much easier for me because I didn't feel like I had to take the extra effort to earn the trust of the audience, because what makes me different from them, which I personally feel what makes me different from them, is my queerness, my transness. So that's kind of how I stepped more into immigrant rights, but I was able to do so kind of in this still sort of LGBTQ lens, which is where I'm more comfortable advocating. So also as my role as a welcoming schools trainer through Amor para Todos' advocacy in my local school and school district, we were able to bring welcoming schools training, which is anti-bias-based bully training for schools. And originally it was specifically for elementary schools. It's sort of hard to find trainings. A lot of trainings for schools are directed toward middle school and high school, because that's when kids tend to be coming out. But most of our LGBTQ students know that they're LGBTQ and learn about what LGBTQ identities are in elementary school. So the goal of welcoming schools is for those messages that students first learn about the LGBTQ community to be positive ones. So that's why the trainings are to educators and school staff. So I was fortunate as an educator to be able to receive the training and I kind of asked myself at the time, you know, like these people really know what they're talking about. They know how to answer questions from parents. They know like the responses when people that are more resistant to embracing all families and embracing LGBTQ identities. When those people are asking the questions, the trainers really know how to respond effectively to them without disrespecting them, with honoring their perspectives and still providing respectfully why it's important to provide the support. And so I was like, man, I really wish I could do that, you know, like I wish that I was able to have that like grace in language and confidence in responding without the fear of saying something wrong or the fear of sort of freezing up and not being able to respond. So it a couple years later, Sonoma County Office of Ed, we're going to be having a train the trainer program because we're going to offer Welcoming Schools trainings across our county. We're looking for trainers, and they started by asking those of us that are in the Sonoma County Office of Education LGBTQ affinity group. And so they asked us first before sort of like putting it out to the greater community. And at that time, I was able to kind of reflect and be like, you know, I think I can do this now. After having experience advocating for LGBTQ inclusivity in schools and elementary schools. So this is our second year of providing Welcoming Schools trainings to Sonoma County schools. It's kind of a costly program too. So it's really beneficial and awesome that Sonoma County Office of Ed and those of us that are Welcoming School trainers that are, you know, providing our availability to give these trainings. So let's see if I covered everything. Oh, and as I began my elementary school teaching, I quickly became interested in and involved in my local teachers union, seeing unions as another way to advocate for rights and to have like solidarity to ask for rights from the district, from administrators, from those that are sort of holding the power or making the rules, using the union as a basis to so that I am not as an individual coming to say like, hey, our students really need these, you know, they really need access to bathrooms that are affirming to their gender. So that it's not me as an individual, I'm coming from it, you know, either from Amor para Todos or from the union. So that's kind of how I started getting into union advocacy and being able to be there as somebody to support my union members. Like it's harder for me to advocate for myself. It's easier for me to advocate for others. And with the basis of the union behind me. So I started with the union advocacy and sort of shadowing and following my local union leaders. And we have a small union, you know, we're a smaller district. And I kind of found that I was kind of wanting more, wanting to do more, wanting to learn more, wanting to see where I could put sort of my extra energy in the unions. So I started to get more involved with California Teachers Association. There's this national bylaw, 301G, and it's under that says that the makeup of our educators will reflect that of our student population. And in reality, what we see is mostly white women educators, which is great, but our students are not all white. So California Teachers Association has a mentorship program called EMIED, Ethnic Minority Early Education and Development Program. So you have to apply to be in the program, and they pair you with a California Teachers Association staff person, as well as a California Teachers Association board member. And then you set goals, and the mentors help you meet your goals. It's a year-long program. And I heard about the program, and I was like, that's not for me. I'm white passing. Like, I shouldn't be taking up space in spaces that are especially designed for people of color when I access the benefits of white privilege. But I was attending conferences and attending the caucus meetings. And some of the leaders that kept seeing me there were like, Tran, you should really apply for this program. It's for you. And I was like, you know, I don't feel like I should take up this space. You know, I pass as white. Like I don't want to take space where there are people of color who experience racism or microaggressions, where I don't have to deal with, I deal with that as a trans person, but not so much as a person of color. But after being recommended to sign up for the program many times, I attended the like information session and expressed my concerns, and the leaders of the program said, "You know what? This program is for you." So I applied and I got in, and I am extremely grateful for the opportunity, partially because of the cohort that I was a part of, we're still connected. So when I attend California Teachers Association events and conferences, I know so many people now. So many people know me by my name, which isn't something that I wanted. I'm like not looking to be recognized. I don't need that. But that I've been in spaces where I've been able to reach out and connect with other people who are doing the same sort of advocacy work that I'm involved in, being able to network with those individuals and learn from them, being able to share with them what's working well in their district or their local area, even if they're in a different region, they're in like Fontana or something like that, in another part of California, we can still share resources with one another and be connected. So that's sort of how I got more involved in California Teachers Association. When I was in this program, I was able to make more connections with my regional leaders, who also happen to be people of color. I was asked to be part of the equity team for our Redwood Service Center. So Redwood Service Center is our regional California Teachers Association is like all California. And then Redwood is our regional area, which is 8 counties. So Marin, Napa, Solano, Sonoma, Mendocino, Lake, Humboldt, and Del Norte. So that's our region is Redwood. And they asked me to be on their racial advocacy. It's a committee of people who are within identities of Native American, Alaska Native, Indigenous, Hispanic, Latina, Asian Pacific Islander, or Black African American. So I was asked to be the Asian Pacific Islander contact for that team, which kind of prompted me to become more involved locally in the Asian Pacific Islander Coalition of the North Bay. So, like yesterday, we tabled at the Warriors Pacific Islander Festival in Roanoke Park. So, I was tabling with some other leaders, promoting our local events and our immigrant resources, and another program that APIC is involved in. They have this really cool program for students and like high school who are interested or looking for mentorship in finding colleges, deciding on a career path. So we have people within the Asian Pacific Islander communities who, are in their careers that are making themselves available to share about the pathway that they took to get to their career. So we're providing this opportunity for young people to learn from other Asian Pacific Islanders and how their journey has been. So I was tabling yesterday through Asian American Pacific Islander Coalition of the North Bay. So I became more involved with them so that I am not just in the identity, but that I also can share what's going on in my area. And then the position on the Redwood Service Center equity team, the LGBTQ advocacy coordinator position became available, and I asked for that position. They said that they were going to suggest me for the position anyway, and they brought it to their steering committee, and I got approved. So we're still looking for Asian Pacific Islander contact for our equity team. And the role that I play now is the LGBTQ advocacy coordinator, which like it's a challenging position because I would like to be more connected all across our regions, but my experience is much more Sonoma County based. I've been more connected with the organizations here. So I forget, I think it was in the spring, Marin just reopened, or like a formerly Spark Center opened an LGBTQ center, which Marin had been, after the Spark Center closed, had been, there were no LGBTQ support NGOs or nonprofits. So we're grateful that that's happening again now in Marin. When we think of Marin as like, oh, we're like the Greater Bay Area, we're like super liberal, we have all these supports. It's like less hostile for trans and LGBTQ people to live here, but then we're not having these resources being provided. So the call for me is, what is working well here that we can help support those that are in Lake County, that are in Humboldt and Thal Norte, where there is less diversity out there, or it's kind of like hidden in pockets and there's less representation. So how can we look at what we're doing effectively and share that those resources, or make those structures more available to educators and students in those areas? So that's sort of those are sort of like a summary of the roles that I choose. It's like I want to do all of these things, but there's so much, only so much time and energy.
Wow, speaking of time,
Time. Wow.
jeez.
You wear so many hats, and I love the work that you're doing and your enthusiasm, Max. It's powerful that you and your sensitivity. It's huge. Thank you for that.
I have some questions.
Yeah.
You do so much, but I do have questions. When you say you teach elementary, say a little bit more about what you do in the classroom. Do you have your own classroom? Or are you a guest teacher and you go from classroom to classroom?
And how do you fit in all these other hats if you're teaching? So, yeah.
Yes, I am an elementary school teacher, public educator. This year I'm teaching TK, transitional to kindergarten, which is the first year of a 2-year kinder program. The program's kind of expanded in the last 2 years to include anyone who's turning 4 or 5 or turns 5 between September of the like that school year. So it used to kind of be for students who turn 5 between September and December, but it's expanded to include students who are younger. So I'm a TK teacher. I teach a dual immersion, so Spanish dual immersion. So our program is like 90-10. So we start with more robust Spanish. And then as the students go through the grade levels, they get more English each grade level. I really enjoy teaching in Spanish. It's fun for me. I like the extra challenge and I like being closer to communities that are not as close to or have less access to resources. Being able to support those kids is really important and something that I wanted to do in my teaching career. So I'm a classroom teacher. I have my own classroom. I have 19 students right now, and they're so cute.
And what school is this?
It's Loma Vista, which is in Old Adobe in Petaluma.
Yeah, you do so much, and we have a lot to talk about. And it's almost time for our music break. Just to tell the listeners, we will be asking more questions about what Max has shared with us, but we do have to take a music break. And Max Tran, you have brought a song that has given you some angst. But you really want to share the song, and we really want you to share with us what you are thinking about when sharing the song.
Yeah, thank you. This song just keeps coming up for me. I heard it as a young person. Gwen Stefani, who grew up in like the next town over from me, kind of like real punk, like has attitude, doesn't let themselves be defined by gender roles or stereotypes. So that was really attractive to me, really drew me in to the music. And the song title is Just a Girl. I think it's Just a Girl. It speaks to me because Gwen Stefani talks about, or I think it was when she was in the band No Doubt. So No Doubt speaks about the idea of a girl being a certain thing and being outside of that, or how the perception of gender is kind of restricted, or like you want me to be this thing, this girl, but that's not who we are or who I am. So the song spoke to me from an early age.
How early?
Middle school, maybe.
All right, everybody. So we're going to play Just a Girl by Gwen Stefani, and we will see you on the other side.
Take this pink ribbon off my eyes. I'm exposed, and it's no big surprise. Don't you think I know exactly where I stand? This world is forcing me to hold your hand. 'Cause I'm just a girl, a little lonely. Well, don't let me out of your sight. Oh, I'm just a girl, already a fugitive. So don't let me have any rights. Oh, I've had it up to here. The moment that I step outside.
Stefani singing Just a Girl. Thank you so much for bringing that song to us, Tran. I think, you know, maybe some of us will be listening to that song with different ears now that we've heard your personal spin on it. So thank you so much. Yeah, we'd like to get more into your own personal life a little bit. And you mentioned in the last segment that you, when you describe yourself, you say passing as white. And I was thought that was curious. Like, can you say more about that?
Sure. So I think that those of us that move through the world without facing microaggressions and passing as white, you know, like people are not gonna, are less likely to challenge us when we speak in a room. They're less likely to interrupt us. That also does not take into account like being a woman or being perceived as a woman. It's more acceptable for men to interrupt women. It's more acceptable for white people to interrupt people of color. It's more often that people of color's voices are downplayed, especially when they are calling out concerns or issues that would require changes, especially changes from those that are in power. or hold more authority. So I can walk into a store and people are not going to like follow me with their eyes thinking that I'm going to be like doing something inappropriate. I can walk into almost any room, and unless that's like a lot of men, where like people are not going to think that I'm out of place. And I think that for those of us that pass as white, it is hard to see or understand that that might be different for other people. So it takes conscious effort to hear those stories from other people and believe the stories to be true. So saying that I'm white passing, when I think about my childhood and how I grew up, what it was like in school for me, like I felt like I was white. My mom's white, my dad's Vietnamese. So I didn't know of like how genetics mix up between parents. I was like, I came from my mom, so I'm white because she's white. So I had this like, I'm culturally Vietnamese, but I am like white on the outside. And they had like kind of, they didn't call it segregation, but like we had three grade levels. Each grade level had three classes. And two of the classes were majority Latinas students. There'd be maybe like one or two white students and maybe one or two Asian students. The class that I was in was mostly white kids, a couple of Asians, a couple of Hispanic kids, but it was like we were in the GATE program, which means either we tested in or our parents were like, hey, we want our kids in this program. The percent of students in that program or that tested into the program, it isn't necessarily, I don't think, going to be like one third of students. So, you know, they just put the rest of us in that class. Reflecting back on it seems kind of racist. From that experience, I like subconsciously learned that we were better than the rest of the students. We were smarter. We had more access. So it's like, I just reflecting on that as an adult of like, these are the things we're teaching our students, you know, that they are less than, or they are better than, they are more suited to, or more deserving of. So I kind of use that to contextualize my experience of growing up as a person, of having access, of not facing barriers when I needed access to finances or college. You know, I didn't have barriers that other people may face when coming from families that may not have any adults in their family that have gone to college. You know, one of my parents went to college and has a master's degree. So I think that like having access to that affluence has given me access to a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. So how, I'm still trying to figure out from you, Max, how do you be sensitive to that? That you're so clear on knowing about your own ability to pass, and for somebody like me, black skin and all, to not, you know, I'm just amazed by your sensitivity of understanding that maybe I can't go into a store, and you know, because people, I go into stores, but I mean, they look at me like I'm going to take something. And that's been our history growing up together, Cher and I being in partnership and being in relationship. She didn't understand that early on. She thought I was crazy in the beginning of our relationship. And then eventually she saw when we walked in with my nephews and stuff, you know, to stores. So I'm just really blown away that you have that sensitivity growing up white in school. So where did that come from? Because there's a lot of people I work with, they're just not aware of when people don't hear me or, you know, put me down versus and cut me off, all the things that you're expressing.
Yeah, I don't exactly, I can't put my finger on like when that started. I know that my mom has always been really very liberal and like, well, we're multicultural and it's okay if you're lesbian and we're supportive of you. And she really made an effort to be as inclusive and supportive as she could, and always challenged my sibling and I to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. So I had that, you know, I was maybe taught to question a little bit more. And she was an educator of English for multilingual learners. So most of her students were immigrants. And when I was probably early elementary school, she brought me with her to one of her family resource groups, which was like a literacy workshop on the weekends for families. So I got to kind of interact with some of her students and their families and the kids that were my age. So that sort of like giving yourself to provide resources and support for those that are not from here, that are looking to have more access to resources and trying to, get basic literacy in English. I think maybe that was like maybe the foundation for me of wanting to do like more advocacy and reach people who have less access. And I think it was also once I got into like my career job of an elementary school educator, public school educator, and wanting to become a little bit more involved, like after my first few years of teaching and I, kind of like was able to manage the workload. I got involved with TIDE and Petaluma team for inclusivity, diversity, and equity. And they were doing like advocacy in schools for diversity inclusion. But like as mostly white women, we're like, how do we approach this effectively? Like we want to find board members that are of these identities to guide the work that we're doing. But we were sort of recommending each other books to read, literature to help us be able to see things from more perspectives, to kind of like deconstruct the like whiteness and the white privilege that we have, to be able to understand it so that we're not in these meetings speaking over the very people that we're trying to uplift, because we ended up doing that. So a lot of the early work that we were doing when we were trying to like build our mission and vision statements was like attending and providing workshops for ourselves to be able to like unlearn the things that, we were cultured that may be harmful to the very people that we want to support and uplift. So I think that's when I started to more consciously dive into literature and reevaluate my childhood experiences, like I mentioned, my experience in schools.
Okay, great. Thank you. Before we get into your coming out, because we got to do that, I want to ask you, how many languages, I'm curious, that you speak?
Yeah, I grew up speaking English and Vietnamese. My parents were very conscious and made the decision we're going to do one parent is going to do English and the other parent is going to do Vietnamese. And my dad's siblings also lived with us. So there were more people at home that I was speaking Vietnamese with than English. But I got reading and writing in English at school and everywhere else. So I'm not very literate in Vietnamese and I don't have like the experience in greater society, but I have like I can speak with family and I can order at restaurants and things like that. And then in school, my mom speaks Spanish, and so she would always give me these tips and tricks of like, oh, the B and the V make the same sound. Oh, the J makes the sound. The double L makes the yeah sound. That's why it's tortillas. So she would always give me these tips and tricks. So I was like, I think I can handle Spanish. So I chose to take French in middle school and high school. Didn't practice it. And so I didn't get a good hold of it. I was really very intimidated by my teacher. So I didn't really feel comfortable. I was very, very shy. And I didn't feel comfortable practicing orally. So I was just kind of like effective at like, answering questions in the books and stuff like that. And then in college, I started taking Spanish classes and I got my degree in international studies, which required a second language. So I took more classes in Spanish. They required a study abroad. So I did my study abroad in Ecuador. And that program was a Spanish-heavy program. We got our classes taught in Spanish. So it only required me to take a couple more classes to get a Spanish major or minor. So globalization, and then I had a Spanish minor. So that's when I got, it was in Ecuador where I really was able to have the immersion experience and use Spanish on like a working level, writing essays in Spanish, conversing with locals in Spanish, where that kind of solidified my Spanish language abilities.
Okay, I was curious.
And I think that having the bilingual brain from childhood, already having that basis, I think it made it easier to learn Spanish than it would have been for somebody who only spoke one language.
Both your parents sound amazing, your mom especially. So how was it when you decided to come out, or how was that process for you?
Yeah, so I was always told that I was a girl, and I was like, I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified that anyone would find out that I was anything other than a girl. And I think that that's just like, I didn't know any transgender people. The only thing I knew about transgender people were that like, nobody liked them and nobody respected them and they did sex work. And I only knew about trans women. And I was like, well, I'm already being told I'm a girl. And like, I have like a woman's body. I've been assigned female. So I know I'm like them, but I like couldn't put my finger on like what it was. I almost never saw like androgynous people. I never saw trans masculine people. Like I saw representation of maybe like butch lesbians. And I was like, well, I know I'm attracted to men. So that's like not quite it either. So I pushed that down. That was like my greatest fear as a child, for anyone to know that I'm trans.
Like how old when you say a child?
Elementary school, for sure. Yeah. I was questioning every time I was told that I was a girl. You know, the people were telling me a girl because I was doing things that were not girl-like. Or I would look in the mirror and I would say, I'm not a girl. I don't look like a girl. Because I would see myself, which is not defined by gender. And, you know, my mom was, she didn't know, you know, we don't know all this stuff back then. So she, you know, she said the most affirming thing that she knew of, which is like, of course you're a girl. Of course you look like a girl. Which I think is what I thought I wanted to hear. Because I wanted to be able to hide and effectively pass as a girl. So I really pushed all of that down. And so when I was in middle school, I was kind of like a late bloomer. I was like, really wanted all of those things for people to know that I was for sure a girl. You know, like, still kind of like really flat chested. And all the other girls are like, you know, their bodies are getting all curvaceous. But I thought that I really wanted it, because then people would know when they see me for sure. Even though I don't think anyone ever thought I was a boy. But it was that fear that I had. When I was in high school, I like brought a girlfriend home. So I didn't really come out. I was just like, hey, this is happening. You know, when some of my friends at school were like, oh, I didn't know you were a lesbian. And I was like, oh, you know, I didn't know either. And I didn't really, you know, I kind of was just using the term like, bisexual. Well, like the term pansexual wasn't really around yet. So I didn't really have a coming out to my family. I just brought people home of different genders. My dad's culture is like, we just don't talk about that kind of stuff. And my mom has always been supportive. And, you know, she would even say some extra things like, oh, you know, it's okay. Like I said, before I was old enough to know who exactly I was attracted to. You know, it's okay. It's if you're a lesbian, you know, we have people in our family that are gay. Which I wish you would have told me who they were so that I could talk to them about these things when I was in high school. But she knew that because of like the negative stigma, she didn't want me to have that negative stigma against them. I don't know. I wish I would have been able to know who they were earlier so I could have talked to them about being queer. But so the real coming out for me was at work. And I was like, it's easy for women to get jobs in education. Really want to cut my hair short. I left it long. I even wore like a skirt to this job fair, and I taught my first year with my long hair. And after that first year of teaching, people know who I am now. Then I cut my hair all short, which that doesn't mean that people are going to think you're a different gender, but it was kind of like a sort of like cleansing process for me to be like, okay, I'm sort of like coming into being comfortable with outwardly expressing my gender fluidity. It wasn't until like the 20s that I heard like the terms gender fluid, non-binary. And I found out that there were individuals that did not identify as either a man or a woman. And I was like, that's me. There's other people like me out there. Oh my God. But I didn't feel like confident to like come out. I was just like, well, people should already know that this is what I am. I don't have to like affirm it or whatever. So I think the first thing, like Facebook had you like you could choose your pronouns. And I was like, oh, they, them was my pronouns on there. But I never really talked to anyone about it. And then I was living with a friend, someone that I went to college with, who is kind of androgynous lesbian woman. She called herself gay, a gay woman. And we talked a little bit about my identity, and I didn't want to like burden other people by having to use a different pronoun. And she was like, if these are your pronouns, then you got to tell people. Like, if you want me to use they, them with you, I'll use they, them. And I was like, okay, thank you. So that was kind of the first person to really, they asked me, like I wasn't confident enough to ask for it. And then working in the schools, finding out that there's transgender students at my school, realizing that there's going to be trans kids that are just like me, too afraid to say anything. I was like, okay, I never had anyone like me. If kids can have like one person like them at the school, even if it's like similar to their identity, it's going to be worth coming out for me. It's going to be worth whatever parents are going to push back. So I told my principal I was going to come out at this meeting where we were getting a training so that my staff, like my colleagues, will know what this means. So he was like, okay, let me talk to the superintendent. And I'm like, I'm not asking for permission. I'm just letting you know ahead of time. And then he like addressed me at the beginning of the meeting, before right before the meeting started. Do you really feel like this is necessary? And he said, you know, I worked with this gay teacher, and he just was always like telling, you know, he had his gayness like out there. And it's not really necessary for us to know what your sexual practices are. And I'm like, well, first of all, I was like, gender is public because I'm asking for new pronouns. And furthermore, if people are having photos on their desks of their families, that's talking about their sexual identity. Heterosexuality is a sexual identity, and it's normalized. So I came out and people are like, what does this mean? And I'm like, hey, I'm giving you an opportunity to practice pronouns. Screw it up with me. We can laugh about it, but then you'll have practice for when you have a student, and screwing it up is going to hurt their feelings. So that was the real moment where things changed for me, you know, and I put aside my given name, and I asked to be called Tran because I didn't have like another name that I like wanted yet. I wasn't sure. So I was like, I already go by Tran. It's my last name. I'll use that. That was where things sort of became real. And it was weird because that's when people were always she-ing me. It kind of like started to like bother me more, which I wish it didn't. Like, I wish I wasn't so bothered by it. I'm working toward getting to a place where I will use all pronouns. I'm almost there, almost there. So it was coming out at work that was the most meaningful for me because it really felt more real. You know, it took people a while to change my name. You know, people still don't respect the pronouns, and I recognize that that's just part of life. You know, anywhere that I go where people don't know me, they're going to misgender me because they don't know, you know, like unless I wear like a really big pin. Thing is, I sometimes I wear pins and people just do not notice. And, you know, it can be exhausting to just like constantly be coming out. So I'm working on getting to that place where I don't care about being misgendered and I'll use all pronouns. So
I like that you always have an opportunity to educate, though. I think that's really important. And it's because of your advocacy for your students, potential.
Yeah, I think that that's what made it more meaningful for me, that it made it less, feel less selfish for me. You know, like I felt like I was being too selfish to come out and ask people to do things differently, to respect me. It's like, this is what we have to do. Like, do we want to be inclusive and supportive? Do we want to be caring and compassionate? Do we want to respect others? It's going to take a little work to be able to do that.
I'm just curious about your parents. How are they with you now?
I have had conversations with my dad about it, and he just doesn't understand, I don't think. So I've tried to tell him, like, hey, if, like, because in Vietnamese, it's really very gendered. So if there's, like, a term for, like, men and women, like, maybe just use both of them for me. You know, like, for teacher, it's, like, Go Yao for like a woman, or Te Yao for a man. So just call me Go Te. You know what I mean? Just put the two words together. But if you have to choose one, call me Te. I don't want to be a Go. So I tried to explain it like that to him. And I don't know. I think he just has a hard time seeing. And that's, you know. And my mom's really, you know, she's a white woman really trying to be better. But it's hard when someone you've known for, you know, 30 years and you've called them one thing and now they're something else. You can love them and respect them, but still like the language, you know, it slips. So.
And you have a sibling too, right?
Yeah, it was really easy. I think because we're of the same, my siblings are already exposed to this, the language. So didn't seem like a challenge for them. Yeah.
I feel like we could just talk to you all
I
day.
think we have two more
And
shows to go here.
we'd love to have you back on, Tran, but right now we
Thank
have
you.
to end our show. And so we want to ask you if you have any words of wisdom for our listeners.
I would say that reaching out, there's other people out there like you. There's other people out there that want to support you, care about you. And maybe that's not the people in your family. Maybe that's not the people in your town or where you work. But maybe the people that feel the way you feel are maybe hesitant to reach out. So if you put yourself out there to reach out to them, maybe that will be a way that you can connect with other people and build solidarity. That's been something that's really been helpful for me. Finding other people that are supportive and that care about the same things that I do has made it easier for me to live my life the way that I want to live it and be more authentically myself and be able to show up for my community. So I hope that others can do the same.
Thank you so much, Max. I mean, this has been beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
So,
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
we want everyone to remember that just like Tran, you too can be living proof that through being visible and vibrant and perseverant, you too can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then,
Good
good
night.
night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. Silence is quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet. Move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it a thousand times again. With you, with you, with you, with you. And for that we have each other. I will rise a thousand times again, and we'll rise up.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCBFM Roanoke Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. The Jazz Hot is next.